The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 503, recorded on May 28th, 2018. Welcome to the 503rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 336th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right, so we're recording 503 again because the previous one was just boring. There was no news, no real news. As a matter of fact, one of the news items was confirmed that Leisure Suit Larry, Wet Dreams Don't Dry is a thing. We don't know much about it except for the brief description on the Steam page, so there's that. One of the items that was late last week, just beyond our podcast recording, was the news that We Happy Few was denied classification and effectively banned in Australia because of drug use. And it's kind of ironic that a totalitarian government telling people what to do is telling people they can't play a game about a totalitarian government that tells people what to do. And the entire reason for it is because they take drugs to make themselves better, but they don't seem to understand the fact that it's not a good thing in the game, and it's a commentary in the game. And that I'm wondering if they ever had an adaptation of Brave New World, if they would ban that too.
So they're okay with Fallout that has all of those drugs.
Yeah, but they changed the name to vitamins and other things. Here you can't do that. And for one thing, the drug is fictional. It's called Joy. So, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. The problem is that you have Kickstarter backers from Australia who backed the game.
That's a shame.
And here's the thing. They're adults. And believe it or not, if I play Fallout 4, I'm not going to go home and immediately start popping morphine pills like the gallons. Treat adults like adults. You know, video games can't cause drug use. And by the way, it's a boogeyman there. You know. I can't wait to hear what Yahtzee Croshaw will have to say about this.
I mean, I've never seen, like, drug use in a game like Grand Theft Auto, where it's patently more absurd, mind you. At least We Happy Few is, like, a commentary. Grand Theft Auto is more like a lampoon.
Now, here's a question. Would they ban a game if you got power from drinking tons and tons of alcohol? No.
Have they ever ban Max Payne?
I want to have a game in which you gain alcohol from drinking nothing but Forster's beer and making it seem like alcoholism is good, and then submit it to Australian Board of Classification and say, hey, beer is legal, and apparently, according to you, it's not a drug, even though it is. You know?
So. Scott brings up a good point. I wonder if Max Payne is banned in Australia, considering that you use painkillers to restore health.
I don't know. If they just call them generic painkillers, I don't think they care.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ridiculous thing. Like,
you know, they're adults. What is the point of having an adult rating if you don't allow adults to enjoy the game?
It does seem rather weird and random.
I want to whisper something to Australia. People already think drugs are glamorous. They don't need video games to think that. No one ever took drugs because a video game convinced them it's good too.
Max Payne received an MA-15 rating in Australia for the strong violence, the coarse language, and the sex scenes. But nobody cares about Max taking painkillers for most of the game, like bottle by bottle by bottle.
Well, they don't consider it a quote-unquote drug. Their legal drugs are better than the illegal drugs or the ones that pay taxes. The drugs that pay taxes are the ones that they like.
I mean, he slams pills and then hammers whiskey for most of the cutscenes
in
the game.
Well, alcohol's not a drug, so it's okay. Alcohol's perfectly fine, especially if you're driving.
Are you playing devil's advocate for the totalitarian video game government of Australia?
Being severely sarcastic. And if you can't hear the sarcasm in my voice. That said, let's talk about what we've been playing. Now, I said this last week. I've been playing Mass Effect, and I'm now through Mass Effect 3. I'm 2/3 of the way through Mass Effect 3. I'm going to Thessia, where Liara can finally shut the hell up, because she's like, oh, it's so bad that Earth was attacked. You know, she's sympathetic. Now Thessia is going to get wiped off the face of the Earth because they decided to hide a critical piece of technology for the past few thousand years. They're about to get karmically fucked. And it's all their fault. It is all their fault, you know. And now the Asari, who are basically elves, they're stuck-up elves. You know, there's a trope called Screw You Elves. You know, you can't argue with elves. Now they're going to be wiped from the face of the galaxy, and I don't really have any much sympathy for these people. I mean, the Turians, the Krogan, yeah, they're fighting. The Asari, oh, we're just going to hide this technology, and we're going to ignore all the warnings the Protheans gave us. So, I do find it, it's the one time that Shepard actually fails, which is striking. The Asari counselor after Thessia goes down calls her up, and she's beaming, expecting that, you know, like always, the hero saved the day. Nope.
I do gotta ask, you have played that game several times at this point. Is there anything like to explore anymore, or is it like, do you know it back to front to back?
There's stuff I still find that I haven't seen before. And also, you know, here's the great thing about the Mass Effect games. The people you take with you, the dialogue changes.
Mm-hmm.
So when I play on casual, in which I just shoot something and they die immediately, I choose who would be the most story interesting. But no matter what I'm playing, I always bring Javik with me to Thessia, because he reveals that all of Asari culture was given to them by the Protheans, and all their gods are Protheans. And he tells it to Liara. And there's some great jokes, too, like Liara says, oh, the Prothean thing is reacting to the fact that you were imprinted by Protheans. And Javik off to the side, or maybe it's because you have a real-life Prothean next to you. I mean, here's the thing. I know the story of Grim Fandango backwards and forwards, but I play it like once or twice a year, simply because the story is that good.
Oh, yeah. That was just something I was curious about. It's like, is there anything that feels fresh when you go? And that's impressive. That's impressive that for a 6-year game you've played several times over, you can still go back to it and find new and fun things.
It's a 10-year game, because remember, I started playing Mass Effect, the first Mass Effect, last week. So I'm going through the entire trilogy.
Right.
The thing is, fortunately, there was a save on my cloud save that actually had Shepard romancing nobody. See, I was doing this playthrough with him having a Jack romance, which starts in 2, but I'm delighted to see that there's a nobody so that I can have my I can start the romance with Caden in 3. And the thing is, here's the thing. People complain that male Shepard couldn't romance Caden in number 1. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they included that romance in 3, and the way the dialogue is in 1 and 2, it almost feels like a series-long romance. But they're sort of like, we can't do anything because we're too busy with what we're doing. And then you have that scene in which they say, you know, all this time, ... And it really feels genuine. And it makes the first two games have that undercurrent, you know, of they really want to be together, but they can't because there's too much going on. And then 2 happens and he dies and it's like, oh, what am I going to do, you know, and all that. So they made it work. I mean, it also helps that the Caden romance with a female Shepard who never had a romance with him in the first 2 games as well. So it's like, you know, all this time, it's been it's been right here in front of us, you know, that sort of thing. I've never been able to do a romance with Garrus and female Shepard. It's just too weird.
Oh, I did. I love Garrus.
And, you know, there's a huge contingent of Mass Effect fans who love, love, love the Shepard-Tally romance. All because in 2, it's sort of like she says, I couldn't believe a guy like you would notice a girl like me.
I've seen that. I mean, there's a million different versions of the visor meme.
And everybody loves the Thane romance only because it's so sad. especially in the Citadel DLC, when you have first you have the letters that Thane sent to her after he died, right? Which are heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Even if you never romance them, they're sad. But when you romance them as a female shepherd, they're heartbreaking. And then at the very end of the Citadel DLC, she imagines, or his ghost talks to her, which is really sad too. So yeah. There's also the Jacob romance, and it's worse because after 2, when he thought he was dead, he hooked up with someone else and had a baby with her. And the Citadel DLC allows Shepard to vent at him for giving up on her and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the hell, hero? You know, you dumped me for somebody else and all that stuff. So it's a sad thing, too. But I'm 2/3 of the way through. I'm at the Thessia moment. I just did Omega. So. And just so you know, yes, I always have the Turians and the Krogan allied, and the Geth and the Quarians allied.
Yeah. I liked the romance with Garrus, because it's not like it's mostly just like a camaraderie thing, because Garrus is...
Oh, yeah,
is...
I mean, even if you don't romance him, it's like Shepard and Garrus are Bash brothers, and there's always a line, there's no Shepard without Vicarion.
Uh-huh. Just like the growth of Vicarion over Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 is one of my favorite plot lines of any character in any game.
It sort of bothers me that even in 1, you know, where I push him into not being Dirty Harry... He ends up being Dirty Harry in 2, no matter what. I guess it's because Shepard died and he became disillusioned, but still.
Mm-hmm.
You know? By the way, if you don't romance Talia, you don't romance Garrus, they get together. And for whatever reason, if you pick the Geth over the Quarians, if you don't have the choice, you just decide the Quarians are just shitheads. And by the way, I don't like the Quarians at all, because Hengirl can suck a dick. He makes me so angry. Attack! 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 Even though... Let's attack the Dreadnought with Shepard and Tally still on it. What the fuck? I am so... I always give him the renegade response after getting off, and it takes every inch of me not to do the renegade interrupt, in which he just punches Ken Girl in the stomach and tells him to get the fuck off my ship. Here's the thing. I give the renegade speech to the Geth and Quarians, even though I'm a Paragon Shepard, because I just want to say, you know what? If you want to attack them, fine. I will just sit here and watch them cut you to ribbons and lay to waste. And I'm not going to lift a finger, because I already saved you so many times. If you want to be morons, go ahead, be morons. Die. You know? The Shepherd speech is nice, but the Renegade speech is how I really feel. See, I always play a straight Paragon Shepherd, but there are certain places which I have to do the Renegade, you know, response. And that's one of them, is... having the Quarians and Geth make peace, but having Shepard give the renegade speech, because he's just tired of their them. Just, you know, I don't care anymore. If you want to die, go ahead and die. It's your fault. As a matter of fact, if you do choose the Geth, he tells the Geth Prime, you know, they made their choice.
Yeah.
So. I'm so glad Reeve... I never... Here's the thing. And number 2, the first time I played... Everybody lived, and that's because I took my time, and I just enjoyed the story so much that I did all the things, and I did all the loyalty things, and I did everything logically in the suicide run, and oh, by the way, you did everything right. Everybody lives, and I've never had nobody. The only thing I would love to see is that if you could trigger the IFF yourself, because as it is, you have to wait to get Legion until the next to last mission. Otherwise, if you don't go and get your crew right away, half of them will die at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was a way that you can say, when do you want to do the IFF? I'll do it now. So I can have Legion in the early, because there's stuff for Legion. Like, if you take Legion with you onto the Citadel, there's this hilarious thing in which they're trying to prevent people from Geth invasions, and there you are standing with a Geth. And Legion says... Geth do not infiltrate. And she says, well, if you want to keep your robotic assistant with you, you'll have to register him. And Legion says, Geth do not intentionally infiltrate. So, you know, and there's a lot of stuff that he says on missions that you'll never get to see because guess what? You can't recruit him unless if you want a 100% ending. Because they'll just activate the IFF, which, you know, which annoys the hell out of me. Anyways. Hey, so, Scott, have you ever played Mass Effect or watched it or anything?
No, I have not.
Well, here's the thing about it, is that it's very cinematic, and there's tons and tons and tons of stuff on YouTube, which is how you get to see the stuff that you may never have done.
Yeah.
And at some point, I'm pretty sure someone may have done, you know, just hooked it so it's like one big long movie. I know people have done the complete romances of various characters, like the complete romance of Talia, the complete romance of Caden, the complete romance of Garrus, you know. But it is such a well-written story. And the thing about Mass Effect 3 is that they were very ingenious in the gameplay. It's hard to put it down because then you say, oh, I have to do this. Oh, wait, no, I have to do this. Oh, wait, no, I have to do this. It's like, at some point, you have to stop. They changed the mining into looking for artifacts and stuff like that, you know, and, oh, I got to find that Turian toxin and give it to the doctor on the ship, that sort of thing. There's just so much going on in Mass Effect 3, it's hard to pull away from it. If only they had allowed it to be developed for 4 more months so people didn't complain about the stupid ending. And thank goodness for the extended cut and the Citadel, because they made the ending a lot more tolerable.
Yeah.
So, and people always ask, when is there going to be a remastered version? Because here's the thing, on a 4K TV, it doesn't look its best. The jaggies are there, so.
I'm getting a little tired of this whole remaster. I just want them to do new games. Don't worry about remastering them. They're not so old that they need to be remastered.
Oh, so you don't want to have Final Fantasy VII remastered?
Not really.
Speaking of, I was about to bring that up because we were talking about games that you play again and again, even though you know the story back and forth because it's such a good story. And I know a lot of people who are really looking forward to Final Fantasy VII because they love that story.
I'm not sure that remaster is going. I mean, it's going to be obviously a big upgrade, but I don't need it. You know, like they did a remaster of Dark Souls, and it's like
I haven't played Dark Souls yet, so it's good for me.
That's true. I haven't either, and the fact that it's going to be on Switch as well sort of makes me want to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. You know what? I'm surprised they're not going to remaster Demon's Souls. People seem to forget that's the game that came before Dark Souls. It was only on PlayStation 3.
I've also heard issues about it, like that it wasn't, like that Demon's Souls was okay, and then there was another franchise before that, something like King's something, I don't know, but both of them were sort of just like stepping stones that led up to Dark Souls, where they kind of figured it out.
you're more of a Neo guy.
I mean, I am. I also like Bloodborne more.
It's just Dark Souls, but with blood.
Well, it's also a Dark Souls with like Victorian elements and guns and all that jazz. I like the weapons and Bloodborne a heck of a lot more. Okay. But there's only like a handful of games that I would ever want to see actually redone in full glory. Like Xenogears, for one, because I don't know if anyone knows, but fun fact about Xenogears is that they ran out of budget when they were going into the second disc of that game, so they ended up cutting a huge amount of content that only exists, that people only know exists because there's a anthology.
Sound files. Yeah.
Well, there's an there's actually like a companion book that was released afterwards that was like a compendium of information and all sorts of stuff that didn't make it to the game.
By that logic, you know, a game really needs to be remastered, and that's Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Yeah, I could see that too. Like, I would love to see games that were rushed out the door, that were good, but could have been better if they hadn't been on a time or money budget.
Vampire like, Masquerade Bloodlines.
Yeah. I would love to see Xenogears in its complete and real form, but that probably won't happen because Namco Bandai owns the rights to it now with Xenosaga. and yeah. That makes me sad.
See, it would be nice to get remasters of Suikoden, but I'd rather have new Suikoden than remastering.
Right, but the Suikoden games are complete. What I'm saying about Xenogears is I would like to see it like the way that the creator envisioned all the way through.
Well, that's just it, though. You know, the same thing happened with Mass Effect 3. I mean, when it was released, it was not complete. And as much as the Citadel DLC and the Extended Cut DLC was nice, there's a lot of stuff that could have been included that wasn't. You know?
Yeah. And like
Dragon Age always had a playable epilogue. I mean, it would be nice to have a Mass Effect 3 playable epilogue in which one character, maybe you play your love interest, maybe you play Edie, or somebody, you know, talks to other people after the game is done.
And that's the thing with Final Fantasy VII, is that like the idea of a remake is just, I don't feel good about it, I don't feel bad about it. I got everything I needed out of it because it was a complete game.
Well, in terms of Final Fantasy VII, I think it's more of a case of people have heard of the game but never played it and want to see what the fuss is about.
Well, I mean, I really don't think they're going to
PlayStation 1.
I really don't think that there's any way that they put Final Fantasy VII out in the same form it came out on PS1, just with better graphics.
It's going to be very different from what I've heard. I thought the story has to be the same. I don't know if the story's even the same. I know that the graphics are different and the battle system is different.
And, like, I think we've talked about this before. It's the thing about JRPGs and also growing up. I had time to grind out, like, 70 hours worth of materia and finding the ultimate weapons and killing them and finding all the Easter eggs and getting a gold chocobo and getting the Knights of the Round materia. I'm almost 30 now, and I have a full-time job, and I don't feel like doing that anymore.
That's why Mass Effect 2 was patched so that you got material a lot faster, you know, and that's what the Shadow Broker DLC allow you to get material just for free, you know, so you don't have to worry about hunting for platinum, hunting for iridium, and hunting for palladium just to get the, you know.
But I think, like, for people that are like, what is the fuss about? I was like, that was part of the fuss when we were growing up, is that you had this game that just like had so much to explore and so much to do.
One game too. You didn't have a whole huge library of games. It's like, we have one game, better enjoy it because you're not getting another one for a few months.
Right. And I don't think that, like, if somebody got Final Fantasy VII in its original form, just with better graphics, I think they'd play it for like maybe past Midgar and then stop.
Anyways, so what have you been playing, Scott?
Pillars of Eternity, Deadfire. I've been continuing my adventures.
We started playing that last week, and we discussed that the game reacts to everything you do and how you do your party and all the decisions you make.
Yeah, and all the decisions I made in the getting short of wood and kind of regretting some of those decisions I did. I'm like, yeah, I wish I had done that differently. But it is funny how they'll mention stuff like, oh, yeah, remember that little thing that you did over there? Yeah, I remember you did that, you know? And because you did that, I'm not taking this other comment seriously kind of thing. And there's a lot of story stuff I don't want to go into, but it is very, very detailed on your reactions on the past game, and I'm really...
I still haven't played the full Pillars of Eternity, and I backed that thing for $145, damn it.
You should probably play the game then.
Yeah, but the problem is there's so much I have to do. And yes, I know I'm playing an older game, but that's because I can.
Oh, you mean different game you're playing?
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing. I don't have just one game. I have about a billion games, and I have to review some games. I just got code for Bus Simulator 18. Which I'm actually looking forward to. Because, you know what I would like?
Okay.
I would like people who I know to play Bus Simulator 18 too, because you can actually have a bus company and have your friends driving buses all at the same time and just chat through. You know, it would be nice to have this podcast, and so we're all driving buses as we're doing the podcast.
So you're playing Desert Bus Game real.
No, because Desert Bus Game has nothing going on in it. It's just driving straight. In Bus Simulator, you have to do your route. You have to pick up passengers. You know, you also have to manage a bus company. So there's a bit of a tycoon element to it too.
Neat.
So, what have you been playing, TJ?
I went back to Street Fighter V for a very specific reason.
Oh, you poor thing.
I know, right? For the record, I do not like Street Fighter V. I think it's the laziest fighter out there.
But it's a PlayStation exclusive. Well, PC too, but...
It's a hellscape of spammy dinguses who will throw just all of the projectiles all day long over the rather than actually learning how to get good.
Actually, let me ask you a question. Since you're Twin Galaxies, how is the Street Fighter V esports making any headway, or is it still people just prefer 4?
No, people play 5 plenty now that Arcade Edition came out. I'm talking about esports. Like there was just a tournament this last weekend, Combo Breaker, and there's another one coming up right near me called DreamHack Austin. And at both of those, Street Fighter V is a higher rated prize pool. Like we're talking about
get people to play Street Fighter V.
Well, more along the lines of just more people come out to play the game, so you have more of a prize pool in there because people are investing more into the game. I don't think it's deserving. I think there are better games. I hate it, but
you just waited for the next Arc System Works game,
which I don't have to wait long. That's June 5th. Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle. Yeah. But the reason why I started picking up Street Fighter V again was I'm trying to get in shape, and I have a system. Basically, when I play ranked, when I'm feeling exercisey, if I win a set, I'll do ten sit-ups because I don't mind them, and if I lose a set, I'll do 10 push-ups because I hate them. And I don't know. That's ranked matches only take like 5 minutes to do, so it actually ends up being quite a bit of exercise. And it's something I'd recommend to people that are gamers and love fighting games. If you ever like just wanted some way to give yourself an activity to do when you're playing, then that's a good way to go about it. I actually have done it before, and I lost a lot of weight before.
Why not just do Dance Dance Revolution?
Because I don't like that game. None of the music is my jam. There's a few tracks in the Dance Dance Revolution library that I care about. But the rest of it, like all the J-pop and it's just never been my style.
I think I'd rather do the sit-ups and push-ups than try to do that frantic dancing that Dance Dance Revolution is.
Actually, you know what? Maybe you should buy a Wii and get a Wii Fit board.
So the reason I've been playing Street Fighter V is because I can get ranked matches easily in that game because it has an active player base. God help those people. But whatever.
What? Not Injustice 2?
What did I tell myself?
Not Injustice 2?
I told you I have a problem with Injustice 2. I don't like the fact that you have to play 3 sets to get out of a ranked match. Okay. I like to be able to play a match and make a decision with the other player if I'm going to continue or not. I'm a ranked player. I need to play ranked. I need to be validated. I need to know I'm good.
I just play against the computer because I suck.
Or I'm like
feel big. Anyways, we're gonna move on to game news, and the first game news is the Steam Link mobile app has been blocked by Apple, and this comes to us from Game Informer. Valve has reported that the Steam Link app, which was announced only 2 weeks ago, has been rejected by Apple and has effectively ended the chances of getting the app on iOS devices. The app was designed to make a mobile device function in the same way that the Steam Link does, allowing users to stream games over the same Wi-Fi network from their PC running Steam. Valve has stated the app has already been approved by Apple, but it is retroactively blocked and the appeal denied. Quote, on Monday, May 7th, Apple approved the Steam Link app for release. On Wednesday, May 9th, Valve released news of the app, Valve said in a press release. The following morning, Apple revoked its approval, citing business conflicts with app guidelines that had allegedly not been realized by the original review team. Valve appealed to the app. Valve appealed to Apple on the basis that many similar streaming programs exist on the app. Excuse me. Valve appealed to Apple on the basis that many similar streaming programs exist on the App Store, but were denied. Quote, "We care deeply about bringing great games to all of our users on the App Store," Apple marketing guru Phil Schiller said, according to a Reddit user. "We would love for Valve's games and services to be on iOS and Apple TV. Unfortunately, review team found that Unfortunately, the review team found that Valve's Steam iOS app, as currently submitted, violates a number of guidelines around user-created content, in-app purchases, content codes, etc. We will be discussing these issues with Valve and will continue to work with them to help bring the Steam experience to iOS and Apple TV in a way that complies with the store's guidelines." So this is the same problem that EA has with Steam and all that stuff, is that Valve, A, wants you to pay for their take a chunk out of their DLC, and I'm pretty sure Valve is using this Steam Link app to circumvent buying stuff on the Apple Store, and that's probably the biggest thing right now, is that they're cutting Apple out of profits by circumventing some of their rules.
I think it's one of the funniest things in the world to see Valve, of all people, suddenly told without any warning that they're not allowed to have their content in a place anymore because
karma is
what? Yeah, it is. Man, what's that like, Valve? What's it like to just be told suddenly that your thing that you spent so much time working on is no longer valid?
Well, like I said, you know, Electronic Arts only releases games that have all their DLC included, you know, the Ultimate Editions, say. They don't release games that don't have their DLC because Valve will not allow, will take a piece of their DLC sales. You know, I mean, you know, with Apple, you know, you have the in-app purchases, and don't believe that Apple doesn't get a percentage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Valve was trying to get around having to pay Apple their due for when you do an in-app purchase. I'm pretty sure that's the problem.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say that one company... I certainly have my problems with Apple as well, but it's just really funny to see this happen to Steam. Billionaire companies screwing each other over is okay by me.
I mean, it's a nice concept, but you know what I would really like is if you could stream your Steam games over your mobile device without having to have your PC running and not having to be on the same Wi-Fi network. Wouldn't that be cool if, like, I would be playing Civ 6 on my iPad, for instance? You know, and wouldn't be playing the iPad version of Civ 6. No. I'd be playing with all the DLC I downloaded, I've gotten for it, Civ 6, on a bus, playing my PC version there.
That would be fun.
Scott? No?
Yeah.
No comment?
That would be crazy. I guess not much to add. I mean, I just didn't know if this was bullshit or not, but you pretty much answered that question. It's all about profits, once again, really.
Yeah, but
so, I mean, like, you don't think that they are actually violating anything. It's just all about the money.
It's, well, they're violating their policies.
Right. But, this article made it seem like they actually cared about the user's information and user-generated content. And really, it's just about the money.
Well, that's a part of it. I mean, if you're going to pay for user-created content, you know, Apple wants a piece of that, too. Also, I have to believe that this is just setting itself up for exploitations by hackers. It just, you know, every time you have something as major as the Steam going on, something as major as the Apple Store, the App Store, it's just, I can see where people might use Steam to exploit the Apple's network that way. Anyway,
cool.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Killer 7 is coming to Steam this fall from Game Informer. After remastering the Silver Case and its sequel, 25 Ward, on modern platforms, Grasshopper Manufacture has set its sight on bringing its cult hit Killer 7 to Steam. Announced during a panel discussing the company's history at this year's MomoCon, the remaster arrives this fall. The Steam release won't be a remake, but a graphical refresh. Grasshopper has told Game Informer that the game's simple models and color scale game's simple models and colors scale nicely to modern resolutions. Additionally, mouse and keyboard aficionados will be happy to know that they'll be able to use their mouse to aim at the many weak points on the Heaven Smiles. The Steam version is a collaboration between Grasshopper and Engine Software. NIS America will publish the title with Capcom's blessing. The remaster has not been announced for consoles.
Well, you know, now PC users who have never played console games will discover just who the hell Suda 51 is.
All I gotta say is thank God that they're gonna be adding mouse and keyboard functionality, because I'm gonna say this: Killer 7 is neat to watch when somebody knows what they're doing, but playing it myself, I hate it, and I hate Suda 51 for convincing me that he was good.
This is the first game with Travis Touchdown, right?
No. This one didn't have him. This one is basically a single person has seven assassination personalities to him, and basically you go through the story, you use each one as necessary. Each of them has their own strengths and weaknesses, and it's a funky, weird sort of Suda 51 style story. The Heaven Smiler are basically these ghostly time bomb or ghostly human bombs that basically try to run up to you and explode on you. So it's exactly what you might expect if you know who Suda 51 is. That said, on like a gamepad, controlling that game is hot garbage.
Now, we were just discussing remasters. So is this a game that really needed to come to PC? I think so. I mean, here's the thing, you know. There's a lot of games out there which are sort of like games you have to at least try before you die, and this is one of them. Actually, you can say that about anything about Suda 51. Although, I wonder, if you've played one Suda 51 game, have you played them all? I mean, he does seem to be obsessing over contract killers. Everybody in his games is a contract killer. Or collaborating with contract killers.
Yeah, I mean, people have their things. Hideo Kojima has his robot and a ninja fetish, and Suda 51 loves assassins.
I said this last week, and that episode's going to be run at some point as a hidden as a missing episode. But I couldn't give two fucks about what's his face. I just couldn't not say
Hideo Kojima.
No, star of Revengeance.
Raiden.
Yeah, I cannot stand Raiden. He can just go eat a dick. I don't care.
AKA the coolest Metal Gear Solid protagonist.
It's cool if you're 13 years old. And they keep on trying to add more shit to him to make him seem cooler, and it just becomes embarrassing.
Revengeance was good. I like it. I like what they did with him. They pulled a fast one on everyone who was expecting Snake to be the main character for Metal Gear Solid 2. And yes, Raiden was a weird thing to go through the game with. But I feel like they sort of rode him back into a promising spot with Revengeance.
Turned him into a cyborg.
Yeah, essentially. I mean,
so you could say thank you, Mr. Arigato.
Don't worry, Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Don't worry, Arigato, Mr. Raiden.
Right. I'm sorry, I don't care. I don't care about Raiden at all. But I have not played Killer 7 myself, so we'll see. It's probably gonna be a $20 game, since they're not remastering it. They're just making it, you know, able to go into 4K resolution, you know, just is what scales up, which is something I wish they would have done with the Mass Effect trilogy. I don't need you know, better graphics. I just needed to have to upscale the resolution.
Yeah, and I mean, smooth out the weak points. Control was a weak point, so it's cool to know that they're going to fix that. That's actually enough to make me go back and try it again.
Is enough for you to deal with Suda51's writing?
I don't mind his writing. I don't like the way the game plays.
The game with the big boner?
What was that? Oh my god. I don't know.
That was the next game, wasn't it? And Travis Touchdown whipped out the big boner, which was his gun.
No more heroes?
And when he looked at tits, his big boner got bigger and fired harder. And he shot it from his crotch. Suda51's not exactly subtle. He's not a subtle man.
I don't remember that at all. Maybe it was the one after No More Heroes.
I don't know. But I know it was one of the Travis Touchdown games.
There is an assassin in No More Heroes who has Gatling guns on his titties.
His titties?
Yes.
Okay.
He's dressed like a weird superhero and like has guns on his chest.
Well, at least it isn't in his crotch.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The Wolf Among Us 2 coming in 2019. This is from Telltale Games. Telltale Games announced on their news blog that the sequel to their episodic adventure game, The Wolf Among Us, has been delayed until 2019. According to the blog, The Wolf Among Us 2, based on Bill Willingham's award-winning Fables comic book series from DC's Vertigo imprint, will now launch in 2019 rather than the later half of 2018. This delay comes as a result of a few fundamental changes here at Telltale since we first announced the game last summer. They later stated that taking the extra time will allow us not to only focus on quality, but also to experiment and iterate in order to craft something truly special, and that ultimately our goal is to deliver an experience deserving of the passion you've consistently shown for The Wolf Among Us, and these extra months will give us the time we need to do our best work. That's always a good thing.
Well, I'm saying it's bullshit. Because Here's the problem, is that Telltale Games have been having financial issues. So, this is not because they wanted to make the game better or give the extra, but because they can't pay people, so they have to lessen the hours and they're going to take a longer time.
For the record, the fundamental change was that they laid off half their studio.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sucks.
Go
ahead.
And that was the last time we heard from Telltale until now. They've been radio silent since a good part of 2017 and 2018, since they laid off half their staff.
Did they lay it off before or after Batman, the second season?
It was after it started, but before it ended.
I loved The Wolf Among Us. I enjoyed its take, and I really don't like the comic Fables. It's just annoying, but the game itself was pretty good. And it ended on a sort of kind of cliffhanger in which he chases after Faith because he's not sure if it's actually Faith or if it's actually Nerina. He chases after Nerina, the Little Mermaid, and he doesn't know if it's actually Nerina or Faith, the hooker who got killed at the beginning. So it's like... And I like the writing, I mean, here's the thing. I did not like the Walking Dead games after 1. Walking Dead Season 2 just irritated the hell out of me. And I didn't bother buying the other two. And I don't know how Game of Thrones did. People were not up on Game of Thrones. And I did not know anything about how Guardians of the Galaxy was either.
Back to the Future did pretty good. I enjoyed that one quite a bit.
Yeah, but that was a couple years ago, though. And they just released it for free on Xbox Live, too.
I really enjoyed that one. I really enjoyed Wolf Among Us as well. Me and Samantha played through that whole game, and yes, the writing was really fun. I think the major difference for us between that and The Walking Dead is that The Walking Dead is just so oppressive. There's no hope in Walking Dead. There's no there's no sense that everything is going to turn out okay. You're just kind of watching these characters suffer and suffer and suffer until they either die or until they're either eaten or kill themselves.
You know what the problem was? Is that they made Clem the protagonist of the season two, which was a bad idea because it forced them to treat her like a little adult and threaten her and treat her like shit and not even acknowledge that she's a little girl. Only once or twice, oh, but she's a little girl, but whatever. It's all your fault. You're going to lay all this on a 10-year-old girl. You know, they should have had they should have had her be 18 or up so that at least, you know, she's being treated like an adult or have a guardian. Because there's a reason why they had to shift to Michonne. At least Michonne was a morally questionable adult that you can make interesting decisions with.
Yeah. And I mean, that I would speak to, for that matter, I would speak to the strength in characters for Fable, for The Wolf Among Us. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, Bigby, you know, he used to be he is a monster. You know, it's just that he's trying to reform, and the entire game you're deciding whether he's able to keep his cool and not be a dickhead, or if he's just really an officious asshole, you know. One of the best parts of it is that there's some players I know, whenever the dialogue choice comes up, they always pick dot, dot, dot. He's just going to stay there and say nothing.
Silence is a valid option.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Minecraft story mode for...
Oh, I know you did. As a matter of fact, I know you were pleasantly surprised when... It was supposed to be a five-episode series, and they extended it to 9.
And then they had a season 2.
And then they had a second season, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Here's the thing. Tales from the Borderlands, I actually really, really enjoyed. But my initial impression of it, when I first heard about it, was, why? You know, and I think that also hurt. People were not up for a adventure game about Borderlands. You know, and even though it was a terrific game, especially, and I'm only going to mention it briefly, and I'm not going to say anything about it because I insist that you have to play it in order to experience it, but the air gun scene, the fire gun scene, that was just out of nowhere and delightful.
Wolf Among Us had its own good scenes, too. Like, there is... When Bigby finally faces off with one of the characters that has been haranguing him throughout most of the series...
Wait, Georgie Porgy or the Crooked Man are you thinking of?
No, I'm thinking of another one, specifically.
Oh, are you talking about Bloody Mary?
Yes. That is a hell of a scene.
Yeah, and the scene before that, actually, you know, well, not that scene, but the scene before it, when the episode before it, when she totally rips him apart, you know, it's such a cathartic experience. Because here's the thing about that game is that the first episode, he just gets the yellow eyes and the claws, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then when he deals with Grendel, he lets a little bit more out. He becomes more of a wolf man. And he keeps on just increasingly, increasingly, increasingly. And it isn't until that final scene in which you see the big, bad wolf. He's yes. not a wolf man. He's just a 10-foot-tall wolf.
Yes.
And he shows you what he means when he huffs and puffs.
The payoff is epic. And, like, besides that, just like Bigby being this duality between instinct and basically civility, trying to basically do right by all of these characters that he's wronged in different stories. And then there's Snow White, which is is an awesome foil to him.
Well, here's the way that in the comics she's cold-hearted, but in beginning of the game she's a warm person. So in that series you see her starting to get colder and colder. I mean, yeah, she's attracted to Bigby, but I just mean, in general, she's learning how to, you know...
Deal with him?
Well, not deal with him, but deal with everybody in the residence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she becomes colder and colder.
Yeah, so, I mean, Sucks that Telltale had to go down the path they did. Sucks they're having money problems. But I'm optimistic for this. I really hope that Wolf Among Us 2 does good. I hope it comes out and it does what it's supposed to do.
I don't even care if it sells well. I'm going to get it.
Same.
Telltale may be on their way out. So just release this and let us have this, and then you can hibernate for a few years.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know?
It almost sounds like maybe they didn't do...
Yeah, they mismanaged.
Yeah, mismanaged.
You know, here's the thing. Telltale, you know, it's nice that you're doing all these licensed stuff, but at some point, you're going to have some original content. I would like something that has no attachment to anything.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing about doing licensed games is that you're constricted, you know? I mean, they were less constricted with Walking Dead because they were mostly new characters. But with stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy and The Wolf Among Us and all that stuff, you have to have kind of some constraints. Although I will say that Batman Season 2, they were actually... They took this entire history of Batman and just made their own little Batman universe in which the Waynes were criminals and there is a chance for you to reform kind of sort of the Joker and all that stuff, you know, and Riddler gets killed. You know, so they're able to you have to credit DC for that. You have to credit DC for saying, you know what, here, just do your own Batman story. It'll be an Elseworld story.
Mm-hmm. Multiple universes.
Well, DC has plenty of them.
Yeah,
that's here's fine. A question for you. Are you reading the Doomsday Clock series?
I am not.
I am. And it's really well written.
What's it about?
You don't know? Doomsday Clock? It's where... You know DC Rebirth, right? Doomsday Clock is where everything's coming to a head, in which it's leading up to Superman facing off against Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you have Rorschach back, except
I had heard
the son
that
of a psychologist.
I had heard for a while that they were talking about maybe doing a crossover with DC with the DC superhero verse and the Watchmen. Well, but I didn't know they finally pulled the trigger on it.
This is the way they're getting rid of the New 52. Well, first they did Convergence. But the way they explain it is that now the New 52 started with Flashpoint, right? You know, the Flash went back in time to save his mother. That screwed up the timeline, so he has to go back and change it back. And then when he got back, it was still changed. It was now the New 52. So now the retcon is that Flash didn't change the DC universe. Dr. Manhattan did by removing 10 years of the DC universe.
Mm.
And now the old universe is coming back, you know, and it's reintegrating. If you really there's Superman Reborn is a terrific thing in which Mr. Mitsopilic was missing from the New 52, and you found out he was trapped by Ozymandias. And when he comes back, they reveal that the New 52 Superman was actually one half of the real Superman. So they merged both Supermen. So now he's back to being regular old Superman, but he does have his son with him. And God, this is going to take forever to talk about it. But Doomsday Clock is just everything coming to a head, and it'll be finally the end of the DC Rebirth storyline, which has been going on since 2015. And now, Michael Bendis or the Marvel writer is writing for DC, and he's taken over Superman, which annoys me because Peter J. Tomasi had been doing such an excellent job on Superman. And here Bendis comes in, and he says, "It's my comic now. You can go over there, sit in the corner. I'm going to take over now." Well, if Bendis screws up, hopefully they'll just bring Bendis back, Peter J. Tomasi back. So yeah, neither of you are following DC comics, because here's the thing: Marvel's comics. You can say whatever you want about the cinematic universe. Marvel's comics have been awful, for the most part, and they're actually copying Rebirth and doing their own thing, and it's like, it's a mixed bag. While Rebirth has been really successful in bringing back the old DC universe and having some great stories, especially the Batman stories with I Am Batman and I Am Gotham storylines and all that stuff. Yeah, jeez. We're talking about comics too much, see? And
yeah.
Getting back to this story, you know, Fables was not really a great comic book. I wasn't really that big a fan of it. But the video game was great. Unfortunately, knowing the comics spoiled it for me, because in the first episode, it seems like Snow White has been killed and her head is on the... Nope. And anybody read Fables knows, nope, it's not Snow White, because she's alive in the comics and they're not going to diverge her. And sure enough, she wasn't killed. Someone else's head was glamored to be her own. By the way, in the game, my favorite part is when Holly, who's a troll, because in the game, you know, the Fables have to have glamours to make themselves look like humans, which is why Toad is in trouble, because he walks around as a frog where the Mundies can see him. Anyways, my favorite thing to do in that game is to tell her that the entire investigation is for Lily, her sister, who was killed. And that always struck me as really warm part of the game, and helped at the end of the game, too. Oh, by the way, my judgment on the Crooked Man was to toss him into the witching well. What did you do? Did you kill him? Did you turn him into a bird, or you toss him in the witching well?
I turned him into a bird.
Oh, okay. That's what most people did. And I tossed him in the witching well because even though no one ever comes back, you're not dead. You're just stuck in the lower dimension. So, but it's cool.
Yeah, and that's not, like, to me, I think the way that I interpret it is that at the time it seemed like if you get thrown in the wishing well, that's it. It's basically an execution. You're done.
Yeah, you don't come back.
I wanted him to live long enough to pay for his crimes.
And it's unfortunate, because if you ever listen to the poem on which the Crooked Man is based, he's not an evil person in the poem. He's just a crooked man who lives in a crooked house with a crooked thing in it. There's nothing wrong with him. In this, he's demonic.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this one, I know that TJ has a lot of interest in. Mega Man X-inspired roguelite 20XX coming to consoles. And this comes to us from Game Informer. 20XX, a platformer roguelike that draws heavily from Capcom's Mega Man series, is coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Switch this July. The platformer launched on Steam Early Access in 2014 has been built on by developers at Battery Staple and Firehose Games. 20XX hit version 1.0 late this last year, which is basically release, and the focus has been getting the game on consoles since then. The title takes Mega Man X's platforming gameplay and inserts it into pre-designed chunks that are stitched together, similar to something like Rogue Legacy. The DLC of the PC version, with a distinct playable character known as Hawk, will be included within the console release. The console versions will also support two-player co-op in both local and online forms when it releases on July 10th. Now, I remember back when we were talking about Mighty No. 9, how you were talking endlessly about this game. And how it was actually a better Mega Man, you know, reboot than Mighty No. 9 was.
The one that I've always been that I've always spoken to is Azure Striker Gunvolt. But this I've seen played. The co-op seems outlandishly chaotic, just because a game like Mega Man X and the control style for this game requires you to be on point with your reflexes, and so expecting two people to be able to handle that in tandem is ridiculous, and makes for some funny times, but also makes for some frustrating times.
Well, that reminds me that if I remember correctly, Battletoads is harder when you're playing co-op.
Yes, when you're trying to do that bike level, because if one person dies, you both lose. But that said, you don't have to play co-op in this, and so I think it'll be fine. I think it looks fun, like the idea of just snapping pieces of levels together to make an actual like roguelike level is neat. That's what and the out, game that's what looks like it control.
What was the name of that game? Something London, Hellfire London? No, damn, because I played the damn game and I really enjoyed it, but it was discontinued.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've never seen that one.
It was a game. Hellgate London. But the levels were procedurally generated by taking chunks of blocks and just mixing them around.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, well, it doesn't exist anymore. This is an online-only game. It was an online game, so it'll never exist anymore.
Hmm. Well, I like the idea of this. I like everything about it. The co-op would make it harder. People would actually have to learn how to work with each other to get through your levels because they're not going to be the same. And I like the way you collect abilities and skills, like passive and active things, is neat. I think it's pretty cool the way they set it up.
I like the idea of a co-op Mega Man. That does sound like a lot of fun, even if it's chaotic and crazy. It's different, at least. Seems different. It would be fun to play.
If you have co-op and crazy and difficult, then you have to play same machine for that. That's the only way it's fun. Because you have the person there in the room with you, and you're both screaming at each other and laughing and just, you know, online it wouldn't be the same. You have to have same machine for that kind of craziness.
And what's more, from what I can see, you do have, like, your Mega Man-esque character with a gun blaster, and then you have your Zero-esque character that uses melee weapons. So that's neat. I like that they have that set up as well.
You know what's nice is that ever since Mighty No. 9 was announced, a lot of people have decided, you know what, we're going to do our own Mega Man game.
Yeah, it made a lot of bitter designers.
Well, not bitter, it's just that it's more like, I bet we can do it better. And without even having seen Mighty No. 9, I mean, just in its, you know, in its original, when it was first announced, like, people said, you know, that's actually such a good idea, you know? Because success breeds imitators, you know, and sometimes the imitators do better.
I mean, Azure Striker Gunvolt was put together as a side project by NT Creates while they were helping work on Mighty No. 9. And ultimately, Azure Striker Gunvolt is still around and had a sequel and has been on Switch. And where is Mighty No. 9 again? All right.
Mighty No. 9 was supposed to be on... No, was it Mighty No. 9 that was supposed to be on Switch? And people got pissy because they said we're going to release it on Wii. Because they said, we're not going to have it on Switch. We're going to have it on Wii. This was a couple of years ago, just, you know. Or they had to wait. I don't know. I think it's on Switch now. I'm not sure. I don't even care. I think it was people who were pissy about Yooka-Laylee not being on Switch. Whatever.
But it's Mighty on No. the Nintendo 64.
It's not a bad game. It's just a very average game. And people, you know, people have nostalgia filters. You know, what they remember what a game should be and what it's like. You know, and that... See, that's why you really shouldn't let people privy to a game until it's almost finished, so that you don't make promises and then they come back and say, wait a minute, what's this? It's game development.
Yeah. Well, I think that people looked at the designers on board. Like, I mean, you had one of the original creators of Mega Man in there, and so people thought that in and of itself is enough, but turns out that there's more than one person to the equation of game design.
I agree. When I was backing the original Pillars game, they were going to do a couple characters. One was Cade Gunn, which was going to be, I guess, a follower of the fire goddess in that game, and that character ended up being changed to a priest. And then there was another character, like a psionic Orlin, who was also dropped.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that... I think it's a case where Mighty No. 9, it was never going to be as good as people thought it was going to be. That said, Azure Striker Gunvolt was better than I ever expected a knockoff of Mega Man to be, so...
We need more.
Sometimes things surprise you.
In our case, there are knockoffs of everything that became great in their own right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look at how many games spawned from Shinobi.
I mean, the bullet hell shoot 'em up Gradius spawned an entire...
No. Xevious did all that. They were the original scrolling shooter. And they had their own bullet hell moments. And some games said, hey, we like those bullet hell moments. And they took those bullet hell moments from Xevious and just made it the entire game.
Well, I mean, like, that might be true, but I'm just saying that I remember Gradius, and most people and a lot of fans of those arcades do. Yeah. And you had all these different versions of that particular style. I don't know. Do you know that there's a Gradius knockoff called Raiden?
I remember R-Type, I think, for Sega Genesis.
Yeah, great. Here's the thing. Treasure's first game was the Sega Genesis and Game Gear port of Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then they just went on and on and on. Silpheats and In Punishment, and of course the classic Ikaruga. Wait a minute, they did Tiny Toon Adventures Buster's Bad Dream? That is not... They eventually did Gradius 5, by the way. Treasure did.
Mm-hmm.
That was a PS2 game.
I thought Gradius was Konami for the most part.
Yeah, it was published by Konami, but it was developed by Treasure.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they mostly worked with Sega, but they also worked with Capcom and Infogrames and Ubisoft and D3.
I was thinking about that because there's a game called Zone of the Enders, and it's a mech action combat shooter game, and one of the mechs in that game is Vic Viper, which is like basically a mechanized version of the Gradius ship.
Yeah, that was Sunrise and High Voltage. For Zone of the Enders.
I love the little callbacks like that.
Yeah, back when Konami actually gave a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the last item. Go ahead, TJ.
World War II-themed Battlefield 5 drops October 19th. Abandons paid expansion model from Game Informer. After years of using the expansion pack model for delivering new post-release content to Battlefield players, DICE is going in a new direction with Battlefield 5. Today, DICE revealed DICE revealed Tides of War, a new live service approach to content for Battlefield 5 that promises fresh challenges, modes, maps, narrative moments, and rewards every few months. This event-based model clearly takes inspiration from other shooters like Overwatch and Rainbow Six Siege, which have continued to grow and expand their player bases with a steady trickle of new content. The benefit to this approach, compared to the old paid expansion model, is that it keeps the community together instead of fragmenting them into haves and have-nots. The lost revenue from abandoning paid expansions isn't paltry, so EA must make up that money elsewhere. Battlefield 5 hopes to accomplish this by dropping the Battle Pack loot crate system and introducing a dramatically expanded player customization infrastructure called The Company. Under this new menu, players can tweak the look of theirs.
I'm just wondering, if they really wanted to make people squeal, they should have called it The Bad Company.
Oh yeah, people would have been super mad though that the game wasn't Bad Company and they just stuff it into there in that way, because that's what everybody really wants is Battlefield Bad Company 3. Under this new menu, people can tweak the look of their soldiers from their various classes from head to toe, as well as the designs of their weapons and vehicles. DICE plans to continually introduce new soldiers' outfits, face paint, weapons, skins, and vehicle skins via regular content drops. The Battlefield 5 PlayFirst trial begins on October 11th on Xbox One and PC. Players who buy the Deluxe Edition can join the fray on October 16. And the Standard Edition launches on October 19 for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC.
Now, here's the thing. Some people actually say that it's not Battlefield 5. It's actually Battlefield V, as in for victory. Because I think this is the 14th Battlefield game.
Yes.
So, by the way, last week, before we get into this, we had a story about there was a rumor that Black Ops 4 was going to ditch the season pass for multiplayer as well. So it seems like games like Overwatch and Rainbow Six Siege and all that stuff are showing publishers there's another way to make money and not have to do the season pass thing anymore, because that just, people seem to feel like it's just, paying extra for an incomplete game.
If anyone needed to learn a lesson about blatant and irresponsible game monetization, it was probably EA.
Five games and was it 5-5? Were they still with them when they did the infamous loot crates thing with Payday 2? No, I think well, by then they were an independent developer. Yeah.
Well, I just think that after the fracas with Battlefield with Star Wars Battlefront 2, that it could be safe to assume that EA is actually trying to play it a little more safe and throw its user base a bone. I would say that.
I think they're finding they make more money doing it this way than doing season passes.
Yeah. Plus, people aren't going to be so mad at you if you don't make the game pay to win and you just make everything cosmetic, something that people pay for. Because people do that all the time anyways. Look at you, like Overwatch is making money hand over fist with all sorts of new like paint skins, all sorts of stuff.
How about that $505 mount in World of Warcraft?
Oh my god. That was ridiculous. And some people still paid for it. So, I mean, you can't say it doesn't work.
You could buy two consoles with that.
Yeah.
And this is an MMO, by the way. If World of Warcraft, for whatever reason, goes down, guess what? You're not seeing that anymore. And you know that Blizzard's going to say, well, we're not going to let people run player-made because they're dick. Everybody's a dick like that. That still sticks in my craw, by the way. If you're going to kill an MMO, if the players want to run their own servers, let them run their own fucking servers. Just make sure they don't charge anybody and make it completely free.
Well, I gotta say, if you want sheer proof that just like a cosmetic loot box model can work, look at Fortnite. That game
look at
that.
Look at Team Fortress 2, the one that started it all. People are paying money for hats.
I was gonna say, Fortnite is a free to play game, and they apparently make enough money from all of their cosmetics that they put up an $100 million prize pool for esports competition this year.
There's also Second Life, which is entirely free just to enter, but you have all this cosmetic stuff you can buy if you want to.
Second Life. And do you also have an AOL account? Or you still have your MySpace account too?
You have your AOL account. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but that's free. And here's the thing about my AOL account. I have to keep it because I might get an important email from people who haven't gotten my updated email. Also, if I'm ever going to do something that I think is going to start sending me spam, I give them my AOL account and let all the spam go there. Well,
people are still playing Second Life, so that's all I can tell you.
Is it playing, or is it just existing in? Because Second Life was just supposed to be a, you know... So you can catch me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
Find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, take care, play games, y'all.
And now you can wash your dance.